Greetings, programs. This is The Hollywood Outsider, a weekly movie and TV podcast, which can be found at thehollywoodoutsider.com with a new episode every week. This is episode 248, and we are discussing our From the Outside In topic, which is about hated films we grew to appreciate. We got the latest in movie and TV news, as well as our own trivia segments. We're going to be discussing upcoming releases, Jack Reacher, Never Go Back, Boo, Amadeus Halloween, yes, Boo, Amadea Halloween, and more. Be sure to get the Ho on the go with our Apple or Android apps. You can also find us on iTunes, where reviews are very much appreciated, especially five-star ones. We do love those. You can also go to your podcast app of choice, Spotify, iHeartRadio, TuneIn, or Stitcher. Please also share the show on your social media outlets, Facebook, Twitter, Reddit, wherever you socialize on the internets. I'm your host, Scott Clark, and joining me today is John Davenport. John, how you doing, sir?
I'm doing great, Scott. What are we going to do with all these buttons and stuff all by ourselves?
I don't know. There's lots of switches and stuff.
We might be able to break something.
Maybe. If you guys haven't figured it out yet, yes, Aaron is not here. He had decided to go man packing this week for a little vacation, so he will not be joining us, which is pretty funny because he left John and I in charge. So it's just
whoa! Hey!
Oh,
what's going on in here?
That's a familiar voice right there. Who's that?
This is Brian. Used to do this just like a long, long time ago.
Holy cow.
I used to do this.
Brian Williams is joining us. I almost didn't recognize you, man. We haven't had a Southern accent on here in quite a while.
Oh, well, yeah. Hey, I had to bring a little bit of balance to the universe.
So. Yeah, totally. Well, thanks for joining us, man. It's really good to be talking with you again.
Yeah, man, it's good to be here.
Yeah. Didn't you hear the banjos when he clicked in? I thought I heard the banjos.
You can hear them over the monster trucks.
Ned Beatty's somewhere crying at the moment. So
he's always crying. Well, man, it's good. How's the drone thing going for you?
Man, it's going well. Very well. It's a lot. It's a bit overwhelming at times. Just learning everything from color correction to FAA laws to where I can fly, where I can't fly, how to fly, what to do if your stuff just flies away. I mean, it's all kinds of, it's a bit overwhelming at times, but you just keep plugging through, and it's been a lot of fun. I've been learning a lot, and it's going pretty well.
So you haven't had anybody trying to shoot down your drone in mid-flight, like I keep reading about in the news?
Not yet. It's actually, I have a lot more people coming up and just asking a bunch of questions, which is great and fine. And I have no problems at all answering questions and showing it off, that kind of stuff. But when you're flying and you're trying to focus on everything going on at the same time, it's kind of, if you imagine somebody playing a guitar and they're in the middle of a song and somebody's talking to them, asking, how do you play guitar? And you're trying to explain guitar while you're playing it. You know, it's maybe for some people that's been doing that for years, it's a little easier, but for me, it's a little bit distracting. But obviously, it's a lot of fun, and it's a very new thing that's kind of going crazy right now. So a lot of people got a lot of questions. So it's pretty good.
Well, I'm kind of fascinated to find out because you mentioned what to do when it gets away from you. So How fast do you have to run to get to it before it hits something?
Well, usually it's high enough, or you're not really running anyway. You're just cringing and saying a whole lot of really fast prayers, like, oh God, please don't hit it. So sometimes it's over water, so you're really not running very far anyway. No,
you're just diving in the water to make sure you grab it before it hits, right?
Try to catch
it mid-flight before it hits the water.
The really neat thing is it's got a return to home button, so depending where you're at and what the situation is, that comes in very handy.
Now, I've seen on the internet a lot that drone racing has even become a thing where there's like obstacle courses to go through. You have any interest in getting involved in that?
Yeah, but I get my ass kicked on Xbox enough by 14-year-olds. So I just, I figure you're looking at hundreds of dollars of broken or thousands of dollars over time with broken drones from crashing and that kind of stuff. So I'll leave that up to them, but it looks fascinating. It's almost like it's like a live video game, you know?
Right. So.
I just I just saw at my local Publix. There was, which is a grocery store for those people who aren't in the Southeast.
Yes.
There was a truck pulls up that had a trailer behind it for a drone racing team, and out from the truck pops out two dads and about 15 year olds who are all like excited to go play. And I'm like, well, that is something I wanted to go do, but that's no way that's happening now after seeing so many 15 year olds involved.
Yeah. I'm not sure my 43 year old reflexes can really hang with those 15 year old kids, those fast twitch muscles and all that stuff. And so,
yeah, they're developing faster.
They are. And they're literally growing up with this stuff. So,
right.
Yeah. It's fascinating. I think it looks like a lot of fun, and the idea of converting a stadium or some sort of dilapidated building into an obstacle course / race course is fascinating to me. And totally. I love that idea.
I do too.
I'm just about 30 years too late.
Well, glad you're doing well, man. It's really good talking with you again. I'm looking forward to doing another show with you. It's been quite a while. So. All right, well, before we get into too much drone talk, let's talk about some movies a little bit. This is an entertainment podcast after all, right, guys? Oh, this is a pretty big week. We finally got that second Rogue One trailer. How awesome does that look to you guys?
I didn't watch it.
You didn't?
No, I didn't. I'm holding fast to this. I'm already sold on the movie. I don't want to get teased that any more things are going to happen to it. So I've been hearing nothing but the good things, but I'm not watching it.
So you don't, oh, my God. I'm sorry, John, you actually kind of stole my thunder a little bit, because I am the same way. I purposefully avoided it just because I don't need to. I saw the teaser, whatever it was, a little while back. That was enough for me. It looks great. I don't need any more.
All right, Scott. So being the resident non-massive Star Wars fan.
What?
I don't think you're a massive Star Wars fan. You're just an okay Star Wars fan.
No, right? No, dude. I mean, I'm not like Justin McCumber level of Star Wars fan. I don't have like a shrine in my bedroom or my office. Yeah. Shoulder. I'm not that deep down the rabbit hole, but I've been watching Star Wars since I was a kid. Absolutely love it. I've seen those originals so many times. I think I saw episode 7 about 5 or 6 times in the theater. Very, very obsessed. Loved it. But I don't want to ruin anything, because I know some people are goofy about spoilers in trailers, so I'm not going to give any big reveals. But if I had any issues or consternations going into this being quality, I think those were all squelched, and I am 100% on board and cannot wait for December. It looks fantastic. And between that and the new Assassin's Creed trailer that dropped, it looks like Christmas is going to be a pretty good week.
I mean, Christmas for Scott all over the place.
Oh, big Christmas for nerds, man. I can't wait. Did you watch that trailer? Did you watch the Assassin's Creed trailer?
I watched bits and pieces of it. I didn't watch the whole thing because, again, I want to be surprised. I only watch enough to get to wet my whistle with it, because I want to be surprised by a lot of stuff. And I think what I saw has me excited, or at least what I saw doesn't have me nervous that it's going to be a terrible movie.
Right. Yeah, that's a big concern. So it feels like a step in the right direction.
Yeah, the one thing I saw about that one that I don't know if I've even seen the trailer for it, but I did see a little bit of the special effects kind of behind the scenes that they're actually filming the famous free fall things. They're actually filming those instead of doing that CGI. So that's that was really neat to kind of see how they're doing that.
And that stuntman is actually doing that free fall. He's not attached to a cable. He's straight free jumping. I think the top one was like 75 feet.
Yeah, there's like they do it at like 3 or 4 different levels, like, I don't know, 20, 50, 75 feet, something like that.
Yeah, it's insane.
And you can just see you can kind of see when he comes out of that last one, like, okay, woo, I'm glad that went well.
Yeah, he's like, thank God that's over with. So it's going to be worth it just to see that alone, really.
At 75 feet, you have time to just think about how big of a mistake you just made.
Yeah.
That's right.
Well, and he does such a good job. If you watch that, he really does the move. Just, I don't know if you guys have either of you guys have played the games, but that leap of faith is a very iconic movement from the video game series. I mean, he jumps straight forward and then kind of, I don't want to say a somersault, because he doesn't like really tuck and roll or anything. It's just like he almost flips his body completely around to land on his back backwards. Just think about that for a minute. free falling down and then not being able to see where you're landing just sounds like the most uncomfortable feeling because you have no control at that point. I'm allergic to height, so I get nauseous just looking at it. So.
Who knew? He's so tall.
Yeah, I know. Well, let's go ahead and talk about some movie and TV news. First off, we've talked in the past about the remake of Big Trouble in Little China, but what's interesting about that project is the lack of John Carpenter with the project. And apparently, Dwayne Johnson, who's starring in the movie, has said that he would like Carpenter to be involved, but according to an interview with said director, no one's even approached him. So was that whole thing that Dwayne Johnson said just lip service?
Yeah, you know, I've got to think it is. You know, The Rock is one of those guys, he's going to say and pretty much do the right thing. He's going to, you ask him his opinion on something, he'll probably tell you his mostly true opinion. But when it comes to, and this is business, you know, once it comes to, you know, when it comes to business, you've kind of got to toe the company line, so to speak. So you got to, he's, if he said it, I mean, I don't, even the interview was kind of like, well, allegedly he said you want it. So it, I'm not even sure if he actually really said it, but we're under the assumption that he did. So, yeah, he's kind of got to say that. You just, hey, I hope he's got a part. I hope he's got something to do with this because he's the one that brought it to us, you know, 30 years ago. So,
yeah, but doesn't that seem weird to sit there and say, man, I'd love to have him involved and tell an interviewer, but not tell the guy himself? Is he hoping that he heard that interview?
See, I don't think that's necessarily his job.
Yeah, I don't
or
think it's
his responsibility.
Job. Okay.
The flip side of it is that does John Carpenter even remember whether or not somebody approached him about it? Is the next question.
He's not that old, is he?
I don't know if he's that old or not, but you know, each time you see him talk about a movie project. So when he was talking about how Rob Zombie felt hurt or felt like. Or he said something about Rob Zombie, or Rob Zombie said something about John Carpenter that was like, you know, well, the guy wasn't really all that interested or anything else in what I was doing. So, you know, that's why you got the movie you got. And John Carpenter like kind of rebutted about it, saying something completely different. And it just seems to me like he might be, and it's not that he's senile or anything, but he might be curmudgeon-y enough that if somebody approached him and said, hey, would you be interested in doing something or even hinted at it? So let's say somebody just hinted at it and he'd be like, well, if you didn't come right out and ask me or anything like that, I don't really care. He could be that kind of person.
Yeah,
and that's why when he's being approached by people in Hollywood saying, well, what do you think about this? The Rock said this. He's like, well, no one said anything to me.
Right.
So it could be something as simple as that. He's just a weird dude. And it's, well, I'm likely to side on that.
We're also reading text version of the interview. Right. You know, it's really hard to convey tone when you're just reading that way. So who knows how the conversation actually went. But the tone, at least from the text, made it sound like he wasn't real happy about it or at least very aloof. So that's kind of interesting. So. All right. Well, you guys remember back in the 90s, there was a Saturday morning television show called Captain Planet. You guys remember that one?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It was back in my heyday. I was a teenager when this came out. It was, for those not familiar, it was a very environmentally conscious cartoon. And it looks like a live action film adaptation, not starring Don Cheadle, is finally happening. But that's not even the strange part. The fact that this is happening, what's really weird is it's going to be produced by Leonardo DiCaprio. Do you think this is a good idea?
I didn't think the cartoon was a good idea when I was a kid.
Oh, it was huge, though.
It was huge. And the thing was, for that cartoon and me, so when I was, let's see, that was probably, I was in my teens, my mid to late teens, or maybe even, yeah, probably mid, I don't even remember when it came out, but it doesn't matter. When that show came out, I was like, okay, superhero cartoon, let's do this. And I watch it. I've always been this way, and it drives me crazy that I am this way. But if you try to teach me something and aren't very good at hiding the fact that you're trying to teach me something, I get annoyed. And Captain Planet kind of did that to me. Not that I love the environment. I am a big proponent of environmental stuff. I really hope we don't go down in flames soon. You know, I love going out into the wilderness, that sort of thing. But don't be bad at teaching me this stuff. So, and I say all that because I don't really like the idea of Captain Planet getting a live action movie. But it seems like the live action movie they might be making is about Captain Planet having a hard time, and needing to be dragged out of retirement or something. He's having like a midlife crisis. At least that's what I got out of the article. So that might be actually more interesting. And watching a old or, you know, middle-aged Captain Planet with a receding hairline and and a beer gut just pissed beer, off because of
beer gut. He's like, I've been warning people for 25 years that this world is going to hell in a handbasket and it's not going there fast enough.
Right. You know,
he's got like a wicked cough.
Beer cans all around him.
He's got like a wicked cough from all the exhaust fumes that he's, you know, endured over the past decades. That'd be like, pretty funny.
An awesome Donald Trump green comb over going on.
No, here's what I can't wait for. I can't wait for the part of the movie, assuming this does actually happen, where they tackle global warming. Because, and just to see the people come out of the woodwork and just crap all over this thing. Because think of like movies like The Lorax or I think even one of the Muppet movies. There's been a bunch of children movies that a bunch of people have come forward and said, well, we're brainwashing our kids into thinking that this and that. And you know that's going to happen with a movie that's theme is to protect the environment, right?
Yeah, you guys are teaching my kids how to be good to the environment. Yeah.
It's going to
exactly
happen,
what
though.
We're doing. It's
that's okay. Seriously what gets me most excited about this happening is just to see the reaction from people. Cannot wait.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting for sure.
All right, last story we've got. We're already aware that the final Hugh Jackman Wolverine movie, which is simply called Logan, is on the horizon. But an image released this week of the film's villain, and it's a mutant named, is it Caliban? Did I pronounce that right, Brian?
Yeah.
Caliban?
Caliban.
Okay. He's going to be played by Stephen Merchant, who got famous from the British version of The Office. And Brian, since you are kind of a resident comic book guy, I honestly don't know how much John reads comic books, but can you tell us what this character is and whether or not this casting is solid?
Well, when I first read this, I thought about Caliban, and he's a member, from what I remember of him, he was a member of a group called the Morlocks, which are basically kind of castaway mutants who, whatever, they weren't good enough or cool enough to join the teams. And anyway, they ended up living in the sewers. They kind of had this makeshift family that lived underground. And his main power is sensing other mutants. Mm-hmm. So he basically he kind of helps track them down, that kind of stuff. So not to the extent like Professor X uses the big Cerebro machine to find them, pinpoint them. He just kind of senses them and goes wherever his vibe tells him to go. Mm-hmm. So it's really a kind of a passive power or mutant ability. So he's really naive. He's really meek. And I think that's where the Stephen Merchant aspect really comes in, because Stephen Merchant usually plays this really awkward, kind of real meek, passive kind of guy anyway. So, and when I first saw Stephen Merchant, I thought, oh my God, they're really ruining this. But thinking about it a little bit more, I think he may be actually a pretty good choice. I know he's had a storyline where he hooked up with Apocalypse and became one of his horsemen eventually. So he became more powerful.
Oh, so you say hooked up with Apocalypse. My mind went a different way.
Yeah, different.
He was a big beast when he hooked up with a couple of Apocalypse, though. He was a big beast.
Right. Right. He was one of his hellhounds, and then it eventually became one of his four horsemen. So he really kind of worked his way up there in his in Apocalypse's rankings, so to speak. So
I'm kind of surprised that they in that screenshot that they were able to pull off making him look kind of like a badass. I mean, he looks scary in that picture.
Well, he looks in the picture that I saw, which is the one from Instagram, is that he looks kind of like the Shadow. It's like the Shadow and Darkman mm-hmm. had a kid is what he kind of looks like. As I understand it, where they may take the story is that Caliban may not actually be the villain, but he helps Logan take care of Professor X. Hmm. So that's where I understand the story to be going with him. It's actually not the first time we've seen him on screen either, because he was in X-Men Apocalypse.
Right.
Not played by Stephen Merchant, but played by somebody else. I'm going to reserve as far as what kind of ideas I have on the story, because there are conflicting ideas as what he is. Some people say villain. Some people say he helps Logan take care of Professor X. All sides of that, of these different stories, are credible sources. So it makes me really wonder what's going on with that. But he looks cool.
He looks cool, and I still like have a hard time wrapping my head around Stephen Merchant playing a villain, because I know he's most known for The Office, but and this is my one and only mention of a video game in this podcast. But if you guys played the game Portal 2 on Xbox 360, he played Wheatley. He was the voice of Wheatley in that character, which is a very quirky, very boisterous, very happy-go-lucky character. And that's all I think of whenever I even see a picture of him is that character from that game. That's just, you know, like a ditzy, overly happy and overly excited, sarcastic little guy. And seeing him painted up like this, Brian, you're more positive about it. You think he can pull it off and pull off this? You know the character better than I do.
Yeah. I kind of think of him like a Igor type of character.
Oh, okay.
From the comic books, he's really more of a supporting guy. He's not really the main baddie. He's always looking for acceptance, always looking for a family type of, you know, just somebody to work, some place where he can belong. So anytime somebody appreciates what he does or what he can do, or anytime that somebody appreciates how he can help them, he kind of latches on to them and pretty much believes whatever they say anyway. So
that reminds me of Nightcrawler a little bit.
A little bit.
That's kind of like Nightcrawler in the movies, not so much Nightcrawler in the comics.
Well, yeah, that's all I can go off of is the movies.
No, you're right.
So, but he's from what I know of the plot, basically, I know Wolverine, Logan goes looking and he finds Hawkeye. Well, he hooks up with Hawkeye to where a lot of hooking up tonight.
kind of party.
He tracks down Hawkeye because Hawkeye apparently helps him on his mission. Maybe Caliban kind of comes into play with that, where he's tracking down. And maybe in the movie, it's not even Hawkeye. Maybe they kind of replace him with somebody else. So, you know, I'm curious. He's kind of in that gray area. I could see him being a bad guy or helping out the good guys, too. So.
Well, bottom line, we're all in for this movie, right? I mean,
oh, totally.
That poster of like it looked like a child's hand holding Logan's hand, like while he's got the claws extended. I don't know. There's something about these minimalistic posters I've seen lately that are just totally work for me. I love that that's becoming a thing again.
Yeah, some of them are great. I really dig that poster with the child's hand. I really there's a big part of me that hopes they take it to the X-23 route as far as the storyline goes. I think I have to give that for me to be completely sold on it though, because I'm on so much as far as X-Men go. I'm on kind of lukewarm ground with them at this point, especially after
Thank
X-Men
you.
Apocalypse. You know,
thank you.
I need to see the trailer for at least to give at least the first trailer to give this one a go or not.
All right,
but you're welcome, Brian.
No, I'm definitely. I mean, I'm giving it a go no matter what, but. I'm so ready for a violent, visceral Wolverine that I'm sorry we just haven't had yet.
No.
And that's what they say they're giving us. So we'll see about that.
All right. Well, with that, let's go ahead and move on to our From the Outside In topic. And this week we got a question from a listener. Wayne Edwards wrote in and said, here's my idea. He said, is there a film that you initially saw that you hated or just disliked, but over time you began to like or even love? And I'm going to go into his example here in just a second. But before we actually tackle that even further, I want to ask you guys, what does it actually take for you to truly hate or dislike a movie? Before we actually go into some examples, what really just, you know, grinds your gears or just makes your head twitch, your eye twitch, and makes you just absolutely hate a movie and be done with it right on the surface. Brian, you're our guest. Why don't we start with you?
Yeah, I think art for art's sake. I don't want some minimalist dialogue, slow moving, no clear direction, no clear ending type of movie. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm talking to you, Nicholas Winding Refn, however you pronounce. So it's movies like that you watch and you probably 30 to 40 minutes into the movie, you're going, why am I still sitting here? Why? You know, this is one of those. Okay. If I give it just a little bit longer or something, there might be a twist or a turn that'll make this worth it. And then you're about an hour and 40 minutes into it and you're still looking for that moment. And then you're thinking, well, maybe the ending. Nope. That's,
no. I want my 2 hours back.
That's right. That's right.
Yep. John, what about you?
You know, I like movies that come up with a clear set of rules and follow them. So that being said, when a movie has rules for its characters and then for plot reasons breaks those rules, that makes mm-hmm. me crazy. When a movie doesn't explain to you why things are happening, not to say that I need to be told what's happening, but you need to do a better job of telling that story if you're going to leave it completely up to my imagination. If you're going to tell me a story, I better be able to follow the dots at the very least. And if I have to put in my own gaps or fill in my own gaps, it doesn't take an abacus, a calculator, a slide rule, or anything else, or compass to figure out.
MIT. Going.
Yeah, I mean, I shouldn't have to have Shakespeare on speed dial to figure out what kind of story they're trying to tell me. So those are the biggest ones. I mean, if a character breaks his own rules, that's a poorly written character or a poorly written story. When you have to tell a character that's set up this set of rules for himself sort of throughout the entire movie and just to propel the story further, unless you come up with a really cool reason why the rules are being broken, that's not cheesy, you can't break those rules. You really lose me when you do that.
Yeah, I'm actually like right along with Brian. Movies that are, like you said, artistic just for the sake of being artistic or weird, just to try to scratch that itch of being different than everybody else. No, you've got to have something solid in the background. And I'm mm-hmm. my immediate examples are, I can't even think of the, is it Wes Anderson? I think there's one Wes Anderson movie that I liked, and it was more for some of the one-liners in it. The rest of the movie just wasn't even an interesting story to me.
To me, Bottle Rocket, and then it was just, he's kind of like the M. Night Shyamalan of quirky movies.
See, I like the movies. I like the one with the kid that with Bill Murray and the kid. Rushmore. Thank you. I liked Rushmore a lot, and then after that, everyone just like raved about how good the Steve Zissou one was, and
Life
Aquatic. Loves that one.
I just
I don't get it either.
Don't understand. And then that last one. Oh my goodness! It's the only one movie I've ever given a 2-star rating.
Grand Budapest.
No, the one before that, with the
Royal Tenenbaums. There's
no, it's a little boy and a little girl, and
Moonlight Kingdom.
Thank you, Moonrise Kingdom.
That's what it is.
Everyone's like, "Oh, this movie is way more accessible than all the other ones." And I watch it, and I'm like, "No, it's just quirky for the sake of being quirky. These actors are just straight up reading these lines, trying to be weird for the sake of being weird." And it. I understand there's no such thing as a bad movie, just movies that aren't for you. I'm stealing my own line, but they're definitely not for me. I just can't stand them. And any movie that does that. Now, if you have a point to your weirdness, if there's a story plot element that, or there's some kind of payoff, like Brian, you mentioned, you get to the end, or maybe there's something that happens in the end. Nope. You know, sometimes it does pay off. There are some weird things. Like, for instance, Memento. That's a very weird concept to do movies in sections and play them backwards. Mm-hmm. And when you're watching it, you're like, I don't understand what's going on. This is really weird, but it was intriguing and the payoff was totally worth it. It was awesome. It was very well written and had a point. These movies that are weird without a point just absolutely drive me bonkers. I can't stand it. So we're very much on the same page there.
Okay, so no like French movies with a girl in a stained negligee with hanging feet behind her swinging side to side, and she's smoking a cigarette going "Je suis fine." Nothing like that for you then.
No.
I went
Is that total, a real thing?
I went total French art house on that. So
yeah.
Well, and I'm not against foreign movies. There's plenty of really good foreign movies, but yeah, there's
but
ones
you
that
you
are...
watch that expecting a French art house movie.
Right.
Hey, I'm in the mood to be depressed for the next 4 hours watching this emo chick in a negligee smoke this filterless cigarette over the course of this whole time. And that's the whole movie for just that one shot, and that's art. Okay, that's fine. But when you see, I don't know, Bill Murray, and you see Ryan Reynolds or somebody like that, I don't want that. I have a certain expectation of entertainment. And
well, I'll give you an example.
Art house cinema is not it.
I really hate the ones that advertise a really clever plot, a really clever idea, and then the rest of the movie has nothing to do with that idea. It's just like a device for a setup. As an example, Brian, I know you hated this movie too, because I watched it only after hearing your review of it, just because I had to see if it was that bad, and that's Melancholia. Remember that movie?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Awesome setup. There's another planet that's coming, like, crashing into this world, and oh, this is really exciting. And then the rest of the movie had nothing to do.
We follow a girl with freaking depression. All right.
Yeah. Who's like cheating on her? Who's cheating on her husband on her wedding night?
Yeah.
And like what? And we're supposed to feel sorry for her? Like
I want to see. I want more about the planet that's six feet from my planet.
You right.
know, from the moon that's about to crash and whatever. I just
is that what that movie was about?
That's what it was supposed to be about.
I never saw it because, you know, it's titled Melancholia, and I tend to avoid things that try to make me feel something. So
yeah, I
was
should,
like, well, you know what? I don't need Prozac tonight. I'm gonna have to pass. Can I watch
real life is bad enough. I don't need to watch a movie for 2 hours that with a title that basically makes me depressed before I even push play.
Right. So.
Right. Now, that's not to say I don't like some sad movies. There are some movies that I like, you know, having those heartstrings tugged at or make me feel differently. I don't need every movie to make me feel just overly happy or wanting to pump my fist in the air. Sometimes I want, a broad range of emotions, but I just wish there was a little bit more of that interesting aspect of that movie. They just used it at the beginning and never touched it again at all. And wasn't it supposed to be like another version of the Earth? Like it was a parallel universe kind of thing going on? And
I think you're mixing that up with the movie called Another Earth or something like that.
Oh, yeah, you're right. You're right. You're right.
Now you're hating on two movies at the same time. Right.
No, because that other one was.
They were equally as boring, though. That's the thing.
No.
It's perfectly understandable.
No, Another Earth was actually really interesting. I like that one a lot, but that's another topic. So, okay, so let's get back to Wayne's question here. He said, as an example of a movie that he hated initially or disliked and then grew to love it, was Apocalypse Now. He said, when he first saw it on TV as a dude in his 20s, I hated it. Although it was weird, overdone, incomprehensive, and even a bit disrespectful. But I liked something enough to give it a few more viewings over the years. Over time, my tune changed. I learned to love Apocalypse Now. It's beautiful, chaotic, emotional, and even, I dare say, epic. One of those movies I love to watch with other people to get their thoughts. So to his question, is there any film you saw initially that you hated, but over time you began to like it or even love it? John, let's start with you.
Oh, I banged my head against a wall for this, and there was only really one movie that stuck out in my head that I hated, and or even got close to disliking, because I tend to talk myself into liking a lot of things. But so Talladega Nights,
oh, I hated it the first time I saw it.
The first time, and really nearly the entire Will Ferrell catalog. The first time I see one of those movies, I get to it and I watch it and I'm in the theater. I'm like, what did I just spend my money on? Why is everyone laughing and I'm just the only one sitting here? And I'm irritated by the fact at this point. And then it comes on in cable somewhere and I have nothing better to do with my time. And I end up watching it again. And I go, well, that was funny. What was wrong with me the first time? So, yeah, with the exception of The Other Guys and Blades of Glory, I don't know why those two were funny in the theater and at home. The rest of his entire – I don't know what that says about me either. But the rest of his entire catalog, I would go to with my friends to go see it in the theater, and they would all be having a good time. And I'm just wondering what I'm doing there. And then a couple months, years down the road, I'll see it on cable, and it's hysterical. So, yeah, that's where I am. Poor Will Ferrell. He and I don't get along very well.
This was an easy answer for me, and it wasn't over a long period of time. But I actually, the first time I saw Napoleon Dynamite, I watched this movie, and I went, what in the hell am I watching? This is the dumbest movie I've ever seen, and it even though I've grown to like it, it is really dumb. It's very it almost hits that itch of being weird just for the sake of being weird, which is probably why it turned me off so bad. And mm-hmm. I walked out of the theater just disgusted that I watched this stupid movie. But as I'm getting into my car, I'm quoting lines from the movie. And for the next 2 weeks, everywhere I went and everybody I talked to, we quoted these lines from that movie back and forth. My lips hurt real bad. Whatever I feel like doing, ugh. And it's stupid. And now I kind of like it. It's almost like I feel guilty for liking it, because why do I like it? It's so stupid, but it's so easily quotable, and it's just ridiculous enough to make me enjoy watching it every once in a while.
You know, the movies I brought up with Will Ferrell, kind of the same thing. I didn't enjoy it when I was in the theater, but you better believe I was saying things like
Shake and Bake.
Shake and Bake. What are the other ones? Magic Man. with Anchorman, it's, you know, what is it, 69% of the time it works every time.
Such a great line. We did Anchorman last week with our innuendos. Remember that?
Yeah.
I had my Foley. You missed it. Had to go back to last episode to listen to it.
Yeah, he broke out Foley for that. That was incredible.
Brian, what about you, man?
Really kind of sticking with the comedy theme here. It's for me, it was Tropic Thunder.
Really?
Okay. Yeah. Well, I didn't see it at the movies.
Okay.
So by the time when it came out on Blu-ray, it was one of the first Blu-rays I picked up. It was just one of those things to where, okay, I've heard so much about this. This is just one of those things to where I'm not even going to rent it or whatever. I'm just going to buy it. I've heard nothing but great stuff about this. And this is maybe one of those to where my expectations were pumped up higher than they should have been. So I watched it, chuckled a few times, laughed a couple of times, and that was about it. I just didn't like it. Watched it again, really didn't like it. And then I put it away for a while, and I mean, I probably didn't even watch it for a couple of years. Caught kind of the same thing, caught it the last maybe half of it on cable, or the first half, something like that. You know, you never catch a movie on cable from the beginning.
Never. You like put it on your calendar. I got to watch this on cable at this time.
Right. And I've got this weird knack of always finding the same random movie in the exact same scene. Like weeks or months apart, it doesn't matter. But anyway, so I picked up, I don't know, maybe I quote unquote, and I'm doing the rabbit ears thing here now, got it finally, or whatever the case was. But I guess it finally struck a chord with me, and I learned to really, I don't know about learn, but anyway, I just grew to really like it. And yeah. I feel like I kind of caught up with the rest of society that just adores this movie. And maybe I'm still not at reverence. You know, I don't have a certain amount of reverence for it, but I'm closer to the group now.
Sure.
You know, it's interesting you brought up that movie, and you brought up the circumstances under which you may not have connected with it, because I went to go see that in the theater with two other people, and we were howling on. It was funny. It's so funny to us. Just absolutely howling at it. It was so great. And then we told a bunch of another part of our group of friends to go see it, and we told them how much fun we had at it, and they were miserable. And they were absolutely just miserable with it. So yeah, I can totally see how if you have your expectations set up one way, it can really set up the movie for failure. And I think the same thing happened to them in reverse, because they told us to go see Avatar, and they thought Avatar was absolutely amazing. And when we went to go see Avatar, it was just like, all right, that just happened.
Yeah.
I liked Avatar. I think it's funny you mentioned Tropic Thunder, because that's one movie that I watched once, and I had the initial reaction you did. I did not like it. I still don't get it. The whole Tom Cruise thing just seems so bizarre, and I didn't like it. I've never watched it again. That might be on my list of movies that I want to put on a list to go back and watch again and see if I still feel the same way.
Yeah, exactly, because that's what's tough about this topic, is that if I watch a movie and I don't like it, and hate is a strong word, but if I hate a movie, I'm sure as hell not going to give it a second shot.
Yeah, you won't see me going to see It Follows a second time. That's not going to happen. That stupid freaking movie.
I think Steve Peterson just unfriended you. Oh, no, he didn't like that one, did he?
No, he didn't like it. He and I went to go see it together. So,
oh, okay, okay.
The thing that was really upsetting to me is that, because I had heard from a separate podcast that I have since stopped listening to, that movie was amazing.
Is that why?
Well, that was the start of me going, you know, I don't like what you guys say anymore. But they were going on about how amazing and scary and all that other stuff this movie was. And so I got all excited. So I dragged my wife, Steve, and Amy to go see it. And within the first 5 minutes, it was, oh, God, what is this? Why is this happening? And there was never a payoff for that movie. There was never a payoff.
Yeah. It was a cool concept. I really enjoyed the concept of like a sexually transmitted ghost, whatever it was. But
it'll be a cold day in hell before I watch that one again. And if I do, I wouldn't be more surprised if I woke up with my head sewn into the carpet. If I ended up liking it on the second viewing, I wouldn't be more surprised. So
I smell a challenge.
Which part are you? You want to sew my head to a carpet, or do you want to make me watch that again?
I mean, only if I'm wearing my Jason mask at the same time.
The one you're polishing in the corner.
Yes, exactly.
That's what we're calling it now.
Well, let's hear what our listeners had to say. And I kind of flipped this on its head a little bit, because rather than just have people kind of list movies that they hated at first and later liked, I wanted to kind of ask the initial question about what it takes for people to truly hate or dislike a movie. And we got some really interesting responses. Brian, as our guest again, why don't you go ahead and kick things off with some responses?
God, I love all this preferential treatment. This is...
Whew. Yeah,
you like having the door held open for you?
Yeah, I'm not sure my earbuds will fit anymore.
welcome to my world.
Yeah. Oh, my God. I'll just stop before I even start that ring of jokes. I'll just go ahead and move on to
There's a whole
Sean
lot of
McGuire.
Swelling happening here.
Sean McGuire says, a movie that leaves no true ending or conclusion. It's BS.
Totally.
Couldn't agree more.
I hate that. Where you watch 2 hours of something waiting for a payoff and don't even get a taste of it. That's awful. Yeah.
What do I have to watch the sequel? Is there going to be a sequel? Is there going to be a sequel to this crap? Jesus.
In most cases, there's not, because nobody liked the movie. So right. Nobody cared anymore.
Amanda Sink, a movie that is scattered and has no sense of direction. Movies that portray people acting and thinking illogically, extremely slow and dry films can do it too. If they're being slow and dry without a purpose.
Yeah, totally. That's kind of how I feel about a lot of older movies. I know I'm sacrilege. It's difficult for me to watch some older movies because the pacing was so different back when they started making films.
But well, they also didn't have like the amazing soundtracks they have now too, where it's just not, and they only use silence now as a purpose. So
right.
Even then you have nothing going on. It's just quiet.
But there's also slow and dry modern movies as well too. It's just, you know, pick up the pace a little bit. I find myself snapping my fingers like something happened. So I totally get that. Alexander Wass says, films which are based only in one location or area. That's interesting, because there are some movies that I actually really enjoy that, but only on a limited basis. Like, what was the Ryan Reynolds movie? Was it Inside, where he was like
buried?
Yeah. He was in a coffin for the entire time.
Yeah. That was pretty good. But then the flip side of that coin is Phone Booth with Colin Farrell.
Yep.
Yeah.
That one could have been about 20 or 30 minutes shorter, probably.
Yeah, that could have been a 20 or 30 minute movie, period. Mm.
Yeah, probably.
Mm-hmm. Jen Sansevier says, inconsistent storytelling. Also, when a movie uses sex and gore for the sake of sex and gore and not as a way to move the plot forward, that really grinds my gears.
That's like all of the 80s.
Yeah. I think we'd agree with that. I think pretty much anybody who watches the first season of Game of Thrones would pretty much agree with that.
Well, anyone who watched the Batman v Superman in the theater would agree with that, with the inconsistent storytelling part of it, at least, because that was that one right there. If you watch the two movies, they're so very different just because there's a lot more storytelling happening in the extended version than there is in the theatrical version.
Right.
Ronnie Yarrow, I despise a movie that is over-the-top nasty when it doesn't need to be, like Bad Santa. I also despise After Earth. No explanation needed there. Okay. I don't like nasty for the sake of nasty either. That kind of grinds my gears.
I kind of liked Bad Santa.
I never saw Bad Santa. That was one of those ones that when people started telling me what it was bad, I'm like, yeah, I don't need to see it.
Well, it was funny because of the – when you think of Santa Claus, you think of jolly, happy fat guy. And Billy Bob Thornton was none of those. And it just, for whatever reason, it struck me as funny. But it's also a movie that, like, I can't watch with my wife around because she just, like, shakes her head and rolls her eyes and walks out of the room and gets mad because it is very, very vulgar. So I get that aspect of it. But, man, if I didn't laugh at that movie, it's pretty funny. Jonathan Spear wrote in, he says, films that don't have a strong theme or something to say, especially indie films that tend to plod along without purpose. That kind of goes back to Amanda's point. They can be beautiful, but there needs to be more substance. I also don't like poorly paced films. I've noticed that most films don't just jive with me, usually have inconsistent and poor pacing. So, yeah, good call.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Anna Maria Germa says, I'll dislike a film if I can't care about the characters. Also, if the dialogue or story feels condescending or dumb, I'm out.
Yeah, I need to be bought in by the characters for sure on a movie. They have to be people I like for me to really like it. And it's really hard to get into a movie where I just can't get on the side of the people who I'm supposed to be watching. That makes me crazy.
Well, I don't think you have to like the characters so much because I mean, there's a lot of characters that you love to hate, but as long as they're interesting, you know, you can still not care about a character but want to see what happens to him. Is that fair?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of characters that really you shouldn't like or like in any capacity. You know, Walter White.
Yeah,
right. Absolutely.
You know, Vic Mackey. Like him. I mean, you like them because they're on the screen for 45 minutes. But
they're monsters or just bad altogether. Yeah. Cancerous, you know, through and through.
They're like, oh, look, he's a really well-meaning meth dealer.
Yeah, no.
Oh, he's the good drug dealer.
No, really, that's okay. I don't need to really. No, really. No, you're welcome to come over and have dinner. But I'll tell you what, just, you know, look, it's nothing personal, but just actually it is very personal. Just keep him away.
Michael Bonovich, movies manufactured to make you cry. I like movies that make me smile, not put a gun to my head. I can't bring myself to see Fault in Our Stars for this reason. I don't like movies that make me cry either. I've watched a couple, and I've watched a couple that snuck up on me and made me cry.
Oh. But
like Big Fish was one of those that snuck up on you.
Oh, that one's so good.
And you're going to laugh at me for saying this, but We Bought a Zoo snuck up on me and made me cry.
Oh, my God. Absolutely.
And I will never, ever, ever watch The Notebook ever again. Screw that movie. Screw that movie in the face.
That wouldn't have that. No, that didn't sneak up on me at all. I actually called that one. My girlfriend at the time and my mom went to go see it because I refused to go because I nailed the whole plot just from the trailer.
Yeah.
And I was like, no.
The girl I was crying, the girl that I saw it with, who I was living with at the time, when I'm sitting there like, he was reading the book, she goes, you're stupid.
Yeah, it seemed pretty obvious to me.
When she went home and started packing her boxes up. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, that's pretty much how that went down. I'm like, but I'm fragile and I need to be held.
See, I'm okay with movies that make me cry, but if it's like a happy cry. You know, like when you see a touching moment between a father and a daughter or something, or the couple gets back together and they have that one line that just really hits you. I like that.
Yeah. Men of Honor, when Cuba Gooding Jr. is struggling to carry that with his one leg itself, is fighting to carry this 400-pound brass suit, diving suit.
Mm-hmm.
And Robert De Niro is yelling at him, you know, Cookie! You know, step forward, blah, blah, blah. You know, and he's given that moment. That type of moment resonates with me and makes me well up and bawl like a baby.
Mm-hmm.
But when I see a dog die on a movie, geez. Any dog, I'm so gun shy of dog movies because it almost seems the dog is going to die.
Have you guys seen the trailer to Dog's Life? I think this is the name of it.
No.
Mm-mm.
It was on before Mrs. Peregrine's School for Unfortunate Weirdos. the trailer comes on and you watch it and they basically tell you the whole movie. It's this dog going through all its different lives, being different dogs, and then circling
that one, yeah.
Yeah. So since when do trailers make you cry? Because that was some, that was, I'm sorry to say, that was some bullshit.
I know.
I'm waiting for Mrs. Peregrine's to come on, and I'm like nearly, I look over at Courtney and I go, well, I'm crying right now. And she goes, I
need more napkins. I need more napkins.
She's just blame it on the hot sauce on your hamburger. I'm like, this is bullshit. Oh, God.
Jim Stein says bad acting and wrong actor actresses for the role. That one pretty much sums it up right there. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Andrew Jeeves says bad writing, really bad acting, and the story not making sense.
Yeah. Same thing.
Steve Peterson, an adaptation that uses only the name. If you change so many plot points that it's not even the same story, change the name too. Stop trying to cash in on name recognition. Number two, pretentious weirdness for the sake of being weird and pretentious. I don't know why I didn't just say it the way he said it the first time. I'm looking at you, Wes Anderson.
Yeah, there it is.
Number three, if it stars Melissa McCarthy and or Kristen Wiig in a comedic role, screw them.
Oh, come on.
So let's go back to the adaptation one. Have you guys thought of, like, can think of an adaptation that happened that it's really only by name and not by that, where they like changed the story so much?
I can't think of one. I mean. Part of me,
I know Steve's got some locked and loaded for the comments on this post, but I can't. I'm trying to think of one as well, and I'm having trouble.
Like an adaptation from a book or something like that, you mean?
Maybe.
Because I mean, I don't think films are adapted from films, or just maybe. Well, I guess they can be.
You know what? He's probably, you know, now that you mentioned books, he's probably talking about a lot of the Stephen King adaptations.
Sure.
That's what he's probably.
Yeah, just roll. Just reach your hand in a bag and pick one.
Right. Ty Nelson says, two examples that spring to mind. First, if I feel I'm being preached at. Nothing wrong with a film taking a stand on an issue, but when it gets repetitive or heavy-handed, I check out. Second, movies with vague endings. Sometimes they work, but more often than not, they piss me off. Yes.
Yeah. That you know what? That being preached at thing goes back to me being like, wait, somebody's trying to teach me shit. I'm not going to take it. I'm not mm-hmm. going to have it. This isn't going to happen. I want to stay ignorant, please.
You must hate documentaries.
I love documentaries, but I'm going in knowing that someone's going to try to teach me something. But don't sell me entertain. Like, so when you sell me a video game as a kid and it's supposed to be a video game, but I'm doing math problems the entire time, that makes me mad.
Yep. Totally.
The same thing with movies.
All right. Well, Courtney Davenport says, when the parent leaves the two kids home alone to run the house. LOL. I think this is maybe a reference to Aaron leaving these two knuckleheads in charge for a week.
Nice.
But also when girls act stupid about a boy, especially a stalkery one, Christian Grey. In addition, it really takes me out of a movie permanently if you put an ass-kicking girl in an outfit and shoes that is obviously not conducive to fighting. Bitch, I couldn't even walk five steps in those heels, and you expect me to believe you did a backflip and a roundhouse kick in them? Nope.
And you know what? She's a pretty nimble chick, so I can understand her point of view on that. And I get in the same, like, in Jurassic
Before
Park.
Before you get too deep in this explanation, I'm going to go with, yeah.
Like, and back to her comment about the Christian Grey thing, like if you guys watch that movie, the scene where he like shows up at her work to buy a rope, if he didn't look like Christian Grey and weren't rich, that chick would be calling somebody. Am I right?
Yeah, no.
Anybody else does that? Yeah. If I did that and said, hey, I need some rope.
Yeah, but I mean, you look at the Underworld movies and here she is in latex corsets and 8-inch hooker boot heels, and she's going running around killing bad vampires and werewolves, people, whatever. Mm-hmm. And you're like, there's no way. I mean, well, I have a better time believing you're a vampire than I do that you're running around castles and muddy roads wearing 8-inch heeled boots.
Yeah, especially since you don't hear any of that latex squeaking when she walks or you know. Yeah. There's no way.
Trying to catch her breath, like, I can't freaking breathe. What have you been over picking up this giant broadsword?
Aaron Peterson, any movie that sets up its specific rules and then completely ignores them or is overly metaphorical.
He's talking about The Fountain.
Oh, yeah, clearly.
Totally is.
Clearly. Anybody that knows Aaron knows he's talking about The Fountain and the Wachowskis or whoever it was that made that crappy movie.
But yeah, the breaking rules thing is a big one too. Like, why would you even bother setting up the rules only to break them? You can't do that. So, John Sanford says, I can't stand it when you can see, hear, and feel the plot keeping characters apart. As an example, character runs to tell their one true love how they feel, and they arrive just in time to misread a situation, so they run back to kiss their other one true love, just in time to be seen by their one true love, who then goes back to their clearly horrible ex, and now we can have 20 more minutes of angst.
God, it happens every single time, too. Yeah.
And he says, I used a run-on sentence to show how bad that writing is. Well done, John. Well done. But yeah, that's almost like a formulaic thing in those kinds of movies at this point.
Oh, yeah. Brian Lowry says, they start after the events of the movie and allow you to know the ending.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Number two, the jokes are so over the top that they stop being funny. And number three, if the credits list Uwe Boll in it, yeah, that's usually a sign. Hopefully you know that before you go into it.
Yeah, I was going to say opening credits.
Right. And number four, too, many main characters and no real narrative followed for it.
Yeah, although I do like Game of Thrones. There's a lot of main characters. Well, what's left of them?
Yeah, this is true.
Well, they have a real narrative working for that, though. So that's
right.
to his comment. Though you're right,
and that's also a television series that has
right, and they've also had like 60 hours to sort that out.
Exactly.
Right. Versus two.
Mm-hmm. Mike Victor, for me, it's when a movie adapts or reboots a franchise and ruins, changes, damages an existing character by making unnecessary updates to that character. Examples are Man of Steel changing and ruining Superman, Rob Zombie's Halloween changing and ruining Mike Myers, or Star Wars prequels ruining Darth Vader.
Let's
see.
Those are all solid.
I would agree with most of that. I don't know. I kind of like Superman. I want to see where I think Superman's a growing character, though. So we'll see.
Mm-hmm. And the last one comes from Mac Herring. He says, too many plots stuffed into one film and one book stretched into two films is a quick way to make sure my wallet stays in my back pocket. I honestly think that's why I never even bothered seeing the second Hunger Games movie, because I'm so tired of the third book in the series being split into two movies. I'm just tired of that. It annoys me.
The first people to do that with Harry Potter, and they didn't really do it that great,
mm-hmm.
because that first movie is practically useless. And the eighth movie, well, not the first movie, but the Deathly Hallows Part 1. Yeah, 7A is practically useless. And then 7B is so much more fun, but really can't stand on its feet without 7A. So they're the ones that kind of do it right, but even then it's still wrong.
Right.
Yeah, and to your point, Scott, just so you know, if you have any hesitation at all about well, maybe I should watch it.
No, don't.
I did already. I didn't watch it in the theater.
We went and saw those Hunger Game movies, and I was just mad.
Yeah, they could have been condensed into one movie. There was so much unnecessary stuff in the middle of those movies that could have just been. It would have been. I feel like if they would have just clipped it and made it into one movie, it would have been much more entertaining, much more better paced. Yeah. Totally. So, all right. Well, that's a good topic, guys. I like how we kind of flipped that around a little bit and made for a pretty interesting conversation. So thanks to everybody that wrote in. I'm not going to read your names again, but really enjoyed that topic. And thanks especially to Wayne Edwards who sent in the question for us to discuss.
Thank you, Wayne. That was an awesome topic.
Mm-hmm. All right, what's this movie? Each week we pick a movie suggested by either our host or a listener. The person has the option to either play a clip, offer you a what am I, a riddle, limerick, or a haiku, or they could even reenact a famous quote from their movie. Now, if you think you know what this following movie is, you can email us at feedback@thehollywoodoutsider.com or through the contact tab in the app, and we'll give you a proper host shout-out on the next episode. Last week's clip was John's, and the movie was Voices. And there was only one person that got that right, and that was, and forgive me if I'm mispronouncing this, but I think it's Mika Consiglio. Be sure to write us in and let us know if we're pronouncing that correctly, because I don't want to offend you. So, but this week, continuing with a preferential treatment on Brian's case, we're going to give him a chance to confuse us all, and he's given us a clip.
This is just awesome. I love all this attention.
It's all about you, Brian.
You're the belle of the ball, Brian.
That's right.
All right, so without further ado, here is Brian's clip.
If I drive for you, you get your money. That's a guarantee. You tell me where we start, where we're going afterwards. I give you 5 minutes when we get there. Anything happens in that 5 minutes, and I'm yours, no matter what. Anything a minute either side of that, and you're on your own. I don't sit in while you're running it down. I don't carry a gun. I drive.
You look like you're hard to work.
Not if we understand each other.
What's to understand?
All right, with that, we'll move on to the box office. Brian, this is where you get to assume your old role of giving us the box office news. So where are we at?
All right. Well, with a $24 million opening this weekend, the number one movie was The Accountant, also known as Batman at his day job. The the girl on the train pulled into station number two this weekend with $12 million, bringing its two-week total lot to a $46 million. Kevin Hart, What Now?, with more punctuation in his title than most movies, with a colon and a question mark. He was a little bit short of the top spot, but bring in a tall $11.7 million in its debut. So while Miss Peregrine's Home for Peculiar Children must have been relocated to the Deepwater Horizon because both are sinking fast after 3 weeks of being on the big screens, Peregrine boarded up about $9 million to bring its total to $64 million, while Deepwater Horizon pumped about $6 million this weekend to stop just shy of its $50 million total. Both movies had budgets of $110 million. So, ouch.
Brian, I missed you so much.
Dad jokes galore.
I love dad jokes. All right. Well, John, new releases. What's coming up on the horizon?
All right. Opening up on the 21st, we have up first, we have Boo, a Madea Halloween. Madea winds up in the middle of mayhem when she spends a haunted Halloween fending off killers, paranormal poltergeists, ghosts, ghouls, and zombies while keeping a watchful eye of a group of misbehaving teens. This stars Tyler Perry, Cassie Davis, and Patrice Lovely. Up next, we have Jack Reacher, Never Go Back. Jack Reacher must uncover the truth behind a major government conspiracy in order to clear his name on the run as a fugitive from the law. Reacher uncovers a potential secret from his past that could change his life forever. This stars Tom Cruise, Kobe Smulders, and Robert Knepper. Really happy to see Robert Knepper in something again. Keeping Up with the Joneses, a suburban couple becomes embroiled in an international espionage plot when they discover that their seemingly perfect neighbors, are government spies, starring Gal Gadot, Isla Fisher, Zach Galifianakis, and John Hamm. We have also, finishing out the line of opening movies this weekend, we have Ouija, Origin of Evil, or Ouija, Origin of Evil.
Is it Ouija or is it Ouija? Because that was an argument last time there was a Ouija board movie.
I always say Ouija.
So do I.
I've always said Ouija too, but I don't know where the E comes in whenever it ends in A. But
I blame Parker Brothers. Either.
Yeah, I'm going to blame them too. I've always heard it as Ouija. And so Ouija, I don't know. Maybe there's an accent on it that makes it a Ouija instead of Ouija. In 1967 Los Angeles, a widowed mother and her two daughters add a new stunt to bolster their seance scam and unwittingly invite authentic evil into their home. When their youngest daughter is overtaken by a merciless spirit, the family confronts unthinkable fears to save her and send her possessor back to the other side. This stars Lynn Shay, Doug Jones, Annalise Basso, and Elizabeth Reiser. So, guys, out of these four movies, did I say four? Because I've been reading for too long.
Which one? 4, 19, Doesn't matter.
Doesn't matter. It feels all the same. Of these four movies, which one will you go spend your money on this weekend?
This Ouija Origin of Evil has got some very cool imagery. But I almost feel like this is another one of those horror movies that they show you all the fun stuff to get you in there just to realize, you know what? You just showed me all the fun stuff in the trailer and I just wasted $20 to come and see it. So I'm going to go with Jack Reacher. I love the first one. It's got Tom Cruise. I don't know what else I need.
You want to see The Running, right?
Right.
Oh, I don't want to see him run. I want to see him kick ass.
Yeah. You want to see a guy who's written to be 6'5" be played by a 5'9" guy and kick so much, kick the same
and
exact
ass. 5'9", that's being measured with the big boy boots or shoes that he wears.
I was going to say. With the inserts.
Yeah, I'm with Brian. Jack Reacher seems like the way easier choice here because the first movie was surprisingly fun for me. I kind of want to see Keeping Up with the Joneses. That I know it's being advertised with this line, but it just feels like a great date movie. Funny but Ouija Origin of Evil. I was burned by the last Ouija movie, and I'm kind of tapped out on that property for a while. Not property, but that idea, that concept. And I can't believe they're still making Madea movies.
Hey, people go see them.
And I watched that movie. And
Tyler Perry is obviously a horrible actor because he's had opportunities in the past 5 years to not only star but give decent supporting roles, and he's not done very well. So he can produce movies, and Madea is just a guaranteed cash flow. So
and answer this for me, because I watched that trailer last night. And why can Madea get away with making fun of people for being overweight? And that's funny.
Nothing.
Mike Myers did it with Fat Bastard.
But it was himself. He was wearing a fat suit. In this movie, Madea makes fun of a fat kid, and he's wearing a cow costume and says, "Why you let him wear a cow costume? You know, because he's fat." And
Eddie Murphy did the clumps.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, I may have to go with the audience for this movie isn't nearly as sensitive to this sort of thing as the audience for other movies where people would get upset about that sort of thing.
Right. This struck me as odd. I feel like anybody else would have said it would be all over the – we'd be talking about it in our outrage section towards the end here.
Did you like how I walked that line?
I did.
That was masterful.
I'm doing a very silent golf clap here. for tiptoeing through that.
What about you, John? What's your pick, John?
You know, I'm so tempted to say Keeping Up with the Joneses because I really want to see Gal Gadot do something different and fun. And I really want to see John Hamm be hysterical.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to say that because I was going to turn around and say Jack Reacher and do a reach around on it. But I'm on a roll. What can I say? I was going to do that, but you know what? I really want to see something that's going to make me laugh and smile. And I think that seeing Gal Gadot and John Hamm do that, I mean, Isla Fisher's fine. Zach Galifianakis, I may get bored with, but John Hamm is charming. And, you know, I could watch that. That's fine. And Gal Gadot being funny, I'm tempted. I'm interested to see her be funny. I really am.
Totally.
So totally going to go with Keeping Up with the Joneses.
All right. So two for Jack Reacher, one for Keeping Up with the Joneses. And I'm not mad at that pick, actually. That movie does look legitimately funny. I just hope it's not a letdown.
Yeah.
All right. We'll go on to Blu-ray and video on demand releases. We're looking at the releases for October 25th. The first is Lights Out. When her little brother Martin experiences the same events that once tested her sanity, Rebecca works to unlock the truth behind the terror, which brings her face to face with an entity that has an attachment to their mother, Sophie. Aaron and Justin both reviewed this on episode 238. Aaron gave it $6, and Justin gave it $7. The next one is Mr. Church, and this looks really interesting. I remember when the trailer came out and how much I wanted to see it, and I miss it in the theater. But Mr. Church tells the story of a unique friendship that develops when a little girl and her dying mother retain the services of a talented cook, Henry Joseph Church. What begins as a 6-month arrangement instead spans into 15 years and creates a family bond that lasts forever. What's interesting is that this stars Eddie Murphy, and he does not look funny at all. It's a straight dramatic role. I really want to see that one just to see what he does. Are you guys with me?
Yeah, I'm with you on that one.
And next up is Nerve. A high school senior played by Emma Roberts find herself immersed in an online game of truth or dare where every move starts to become manipulated by an anonymous community of watchers. This one also stars Dave Franco, and that's a movie that I was tired of before it even released in the theaters because it was on every video on demand thing I watched as a commercial. I swear I saw the commercial for that trailer. Or I saw that trailer at least like 50 times, and I was done with it. Had no nothing to, didn't want anything to do with it.
It was only in the theater for like 5 minutes, wasn't it?
I think so. Yeah, it didn't do very well. The last one we have on disc is Captain Fantastic. Viggo Mortensen stars in this movie about a father in the forests of the Pacific Northwest who is devoted to raising his six kids with a rigorous physical and intellectual education. He's forced to leave his paradise and enter the world, challenging his idea of what it means to be a parent. I'm just happy to see him on screen again. It seems like it's been a while.
Viggo, you are like the buzzing of flies to him.
We've also got a couple video on demand releases. The first is In the Valley of Violence. This one releases on October 21st. Aaron actually reviewed this one and calls it the John Wick of the West. Gave it $7. That's a pretty good way to get me into it.
That's a pretty good way. That's the one that stars Ethan Hawke, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. And he saw it at South by Southwest. Got to see an advanced screening of that. So seemed
really. If you're gonna say South by Southwest, you got to say it the way Aaron does. South by.
South by. I'm sorry. It's how what the kids are calling it these days.
Yeah, South by.
And the last one, also releasing on October 21st, is Fear Incorporated. A horror junkie and his friends sign up with a company that brings their customers' greatest fears to life. In other words, that is Aaron's movie about bees. But yeah, it sounds kind of interesting. But check those out. All right, and as we move forward, we're going to move on to our Ho trivia game. And Brian, again, man, this episode's all about you. You've got a game for us.
Podcast Viagra, baby.
Dance, monkey, dance.
So what game have you prepared for us this week? I'm excited.
All right. It's one of my favorites. It's one of our oldest ones, but it's Stump the Ho. So basically, I find a trivia question for you guys and see if you guys can guess it. I'll make it pretty simple. It's a pretty basic question this week. How many times has Tom Cruise played a character named Jack? 7, 4, 2, or 5?
I can think of one off the top of my head.
Well, 2 should be pretty easy to figure out at this point.
Okay. What were the numbers again? 7, 4, 2, or 5?
5.
It's going to be a total guess for me. John, you got a guess?
I got a guess.
Okay.
I'm going to go with 5.
I'm going to go 4.
Okay. Those are both very, very good guesses.
Oh, no.
Unfortunately,
both wrong.
Actually, Scott, you're right. There's 4. Obviously, okay. The two Jack Reacher and the new Jack Reacher movie coming out, so there's 2 off the top. He played Jack in the movie Legend.
Ah, okay.
And also Oblivion, the sci-fi movie a few years ago.
You know what? Right. I was thinking Mission Impossible, but he wasn't Jack. Obviously, he was Ethan Hawke. Jack was the guy in the elevator. If I remember right.
Yeah.
So, all right. I guess I'm a good guesser, I guess.
Keep it simple this week. Nothing too fancy, but a little numbers game for you.
Very cool. Well, thanks for that, man. All right. As we head into the finale here, you guys got any recent film or TV recommendations that we haven't previously discussed?
Well, I don't know. This, for me, actually, there's, obviously there's been a lot of talk about Westworld. Mm-hmm. So I'm just going to say I'm on board with that. I'm also on board with The Exorcist. I don't know. I haven't heard. I actually don't know you guys' thoughts on The Exorcist, if you are into that. But I'm really impressed with what they're getting away with, but also the fairly strong storyline that they've got going on.
I've heard good things about it. I have not checked it out myself. I've got too many shows in the hopper right now.
I think Aaron's watching that one.
Is he?
Sure. Yeah.
Cool.
I just finished up season 3 of Penny Dreadful, and boy, am I done. Am I glad that's done and over with. that show, I have like so many mixed feelings about that show, because that one, it's such a beautiful show. It's so, as far as like the production, everything they did, it's beautiful. And the story is pretty great. Unfortunately, they gave absolutely everyone massive amounts of feelings. So if you can wade your way through feelings, like Frankenstein's monster having feelings, the bride of Frankenstein's monster having feelings. Everyone has damn feelings in that damn show. If you can wade through that, I would say catch up on Netflix for sure. But okay. Yeah, that's what I did while I was sick over the weekend. I caught up on that and I finished the entire 11th season of Supernatural on Netflix. And yeah, people said that the 11th season, it picks back up and gets really, really good again. Cosine, that was a pretty good season.
Okay, cool. One I'll mention real quick, it's a very older movie, but or a very old movie. A while ago, we talked about Everybody Wants Some, that movie that took place like in the 80s about a baseball team. But just kind of this like a public service announcement to let everybody know that Dazed and Confused is actually on Netflix streaming now. And that movie is still just as entertaining as it was when I first watched it several years ago. And I don't know why, because absolutely nothing happens in that movie, but it's just a lot of fun to watch. So check that one out. What about, as of this recording, Walking Dead is going to be releasing this weekend. Is anybody actually looking forward to that one, or?
I am waiting for that with bated breath and a bin of Prozac right next to me. Cause that series scares me, and this season scares me the most because they may either make me a complete and total fanboy about the series, or they could completely break my heart and show me that there's no point in even caring anymore. So it can go either way at this point.
Well, I've talked about this in the past, and I feel like Walking Dead is a show that I am going to be watching each week, but I'm going to be kind of doing so begrudgingly so. I feel like I'm more interested to see just the answer to that big question that they left with a cliffhanger at the finale of the last season, more than I am what's happening with the rest of the thing. I really hope that they move forward the story and we don't get the same rehash. But Brian, I know you're like one of the biggest Walking Dead fans I know. I assume you're looking forward to it.
Yeah, I totally am. My thing is, I don't like what they did with how they ended that, you know, last season. They're, you know, the company line, so to speak, what all the producers and the actors and stuff are saying is, whoever gets it, this is the big catalyst for another character, the way another character ends up over the course of the next season and more, maybe. So this is one of those things to where they obviously know what is in store farther than what we do.
So well, I hope so.
I have a certain amount of trust, but I also have a certain amount of skepticism because I don't like how they handled the Glenn issue from last season.
Right.
I don't like how they've built up something so large as a Terminus. And then really Terminus was for the most part resolved in about an episode.
Right.
So they've got this, with me anyway, they've got this history of building something up for about a season or more, or at least a half season, because they're pretty good about kind of every half season is just about its own little season. So they've got this history of building all this stuff up and then not really given as much of a payoff as what I would prefer.
To that effect, what I can totally see them doing is making each episode a what if for the first half of the season, what if it's this person? And then you go through Negan braining that person and then the fallout for that episode.
What would be great? Honestly,
people would riot.
There is a sick part of me that wishes they would treat this situation like Clue and have about four
oh, no.
what ifs, you know? So, but what, you know, this quarter of the country sees one in, you know, one death, another part of the country sees another death, and just divvy it up that way. That would be effing brilliant and horrible at the same time.
No, dude, I seriously love that idea. If they actually filmed different ones in each area, that would be amazing.
You know, because you know they did. You know they've got different
they filmed it.
You know they filmed something different than what's going to be aired.
Well, yeah, because I follow a lot of the makeup artists on Instagram, and so from following a lot of the makeup artists on Instagram, I've seen what's happened to at least three characters, And each time they post, each time they post a picture, they go, "Don't worry, this isn't a spoiler, but it's clearly somebody who's just been brained." So they show, I've seen Glenn been brained. I've seen a couple other ones in the pictures of them being brained, or the post, like the actors sitting there wearing all the makeup with a big shit-eating grin on their face. I might as well just say shit because I've already said it five times this episode. But the actors sitting there with a big grin on their face and completely covered in blood, as if something just happened to them. So there's been at least three characters that I've seen that with through following makeup artists. So yeah, it seems like they're going to set it up to be something like that, or they're doing everything they can right now to do damage control to make sure nobody sees what actually happens, or it doesn't get leaked before the series premiere or some junk.
But in a real shallow point of view here, real short-sighted thing, I really don't like what they did with this. I just don't. I think The Walking Dead is so large of a property and has such a large following at this point. You don't need to tease cliffhangers in this fashion,
right?
To get people to come back the following season.
I think this is more about creating a conversation, and that's one side of it. The other side of it is if you ever listen to Robert Kirkman, I believe Kirkman's the writer of the series, right? He's the creator. Mm-hmm. He is the kind of guy who would do that to his friends on a regular basis. So I can totally see him choosing to come up with something like that, because number one, it would create a conversation for people. And number two, because he just thinks it's funny. I can totally see that happening based off of what I've seen him out in the world. So.
Yeah. Like I said, I'm going to be watching it, but I'm not sure how much I'm going to like it, especially because that's Sunday nights, right?
Yeah, it's Sunday night. So you have Westworld and that.
Yeah, it's if they're at the same time, I'm sorry, but Westworld is going
to
win out.
For probably the next 2 months, I'm not going to bed before midnight, I think, any Sunday night.
Yeah.
Because I'll be watching one, and then as soon as it's over, I'm flipping it over to whatever it was I just missed, and then probably going back and watching The Talking Dead after that.
So. Yep. And then hope there's not a football game on that night.
Exactly.
Well, guys, is there any recent outrage in the entertainment news or?
I found something that I thought was super interesting, and it bugs me to an extent. So there's been a lot of talk about Stranger Things and season two of Stranger Things, but something that I just discovered today is that apparently there's been a lot of talk of whether or not Will Byers character or Will is gay. There's a lot of people who keep on theorizing that he's gay. They want to know that he's gay. They want something to know. And to remind you who Will was, is that he's an 11-year-old boy in the story. So something interesting happened on Instagram. Noah Schnapp, who's the kid who plays Will, who's 12. He is 12 years old, and he decides he's going to address this, which the fact that there's a 12-year-old actor out there who decides he's going to address something like this is really cool to me. But the fact that he has to address it is kind of sad to me. But anyhow, part of his
12 years old, I was trying to figure out which arm it was under, much less if it was straight or gay.
Yeah, no kidding. So here we go. Noah Schnapp said on first part of his post, I'm going to try to read this and give this some sort of justice, I'm surprised by it.
Okay.
I've been reading stuff for a while. I think everyone here is missing the point, he wrote. An author called Gary Schmidt came to speak to at our school this week, and he said that good stories aren't supposed to leave you with answers because then you never question yourself and you forget about it. A good book or a good show leaves a lot of unanswered questions, but makes you think, which is what you are all doing. So he's commenting on the fact that everyone's thinking about whether or not this character is gay or straight, trying to come up with a story behind it. And it's a 12-year-old kid who just put this beautiful thought out there in the world about that. I don't know if he's got a publicist doing it for him, but that was kind of brilliant. What do you guys think?
The whole thing just kind of bugs me that that's even a concern. What in that story makes that even an issue or matter?
In the story itself, it was never really an issue or matter. Where I think people are getting this from is a lot of the subtext, where his father called him gay in the show, and the other parts of it was he was always a little different. It was not Will. Will wouldn't be off making out with a girl because Will's a little different. So there's always that little talk about Will when it came to where is he. So
Didn't he spend like? Oh, no, that's not the one that was in the underworld or whatever, right?
No, Will was the one that was in the upside down.
Yeah, so he was barely in the show.
Yeah,
right.
another good point. Why are we so worried about whether or not he's gay or straight? Let's just get him out of the upside down.
What was the name of that? What was the name of that creature?
The Demigorgon.
The Demigorgon. Was there some things going on with the Demigorgon that we need to be aware about? I mean,
right. Okay, you know what? I was about to say something, but then my filter kicked in and said, no, don't do it.
Oh, filters suck.
Yeah. Oh, man.
God.
Anyway, he goes on to say something, some other things that are pretty interesting. So he goes on to say, for me, Will being gay is gay or not is besides the point, he continued. Stranger Things is a show about a bunch of kids who are outsiders and find each other because they have been bullied or some way are different. Does being sensitive or loner or a teenager who likes photography or a girl with red hair and big glasses make you gay? I'm only 12, but I do know we all relate to being different. And that's why I think the Duffers wrote the show the way they did. So you can ask all these questions. I hope the real answer never comes out. Bravo.
Well said. I like
this
that.
Kid. He became he's my hero. I just turned 40 and a 12-year-old said something brilliant. Okay.
That's
good
awesome.
Good for him, man.
Totally.
And said it in a smarter and much better fashion than any of us could actually do it. That's totally. What's amazing.
We would have been like, you know what? You could go and tell your mom that she's gay because yeah.
Because I would have responded with, you're an effing idiot.
Right. All right, well, let's wrap things up here. We got a couple tweets and emails before we finish out. So, John, why don't you kick things off with that tweet?
My two picks would have been – okay, this is from Steven Barras on Twitter. My two picks would have been Pennywise the Clown because I watched it all at a ridiculously young age, like a single figure age, and was terrified by clowns until I grew up, and my second pick was Slugs from the movie Slugs. I literally couldn't sit on the toilet for years without imagining a slug crawling up inside and devouring me from the inside out. Toilet time became a race.
And he's obviously responding to our top horror picks discussion that we had last week. So, which is why he said he was late. So good call there. And Brian?
From Amy Hutchison, I also want to say congratulations to John. He's the one who introduced Steve and I to the Ho so long ago, so it seems fitting to me that he's an official voice. I've made some incredible friends and had some incredible times through this show, and all of that wouldn't have happened without John.
Nice.
That's sweet. Nice.
Thank you, Amy. Mm-hmm.
Her significant other, Steve Peterson, says no to a Purge show. Yes to A-Team if they can make it fun like the movie. And if we're going to do remakes and reboots and whatnot, for the love of God, when can we get a Cabin in the Woods show? Really wish I had brought this up to Drew Goddard when I met him. There was too much Lost stuff going on, and I forgot.
All right. Well, that's going to do it for the show, everybody. Thanks so much for listening. Be sure to write some iTunes reviews for us. We really do appreciate them. This 5 stars helps us a lot more than you might think. You can also join our Facebook group or Twitter at @H_Outsider. And be sure to stay through the credits for outtakes. Maybe. That's a big maybe there. I'm not sure if we'll have outtakes. It's a question mark. You can find other episodes, reviews, and other info at thehollywoodoutsider.com. And our email address is feedback@thehollywoodoutsider.com. Share us your thoughts and let us know what you thought. Share your thoughts and let us know what you thought. That was awesome, Scott. Great.
Lots of thoughts and thoughts and thoughts about thoughts.
Also, remember to grab the Ho on the go with our Apple or Android apps, Spotify, or subscribe in your podcast app of choice. Thanks so much, John, for being here and that you are a permanent member.
Thank you so much for having me again. I love being here. If you guys are interested in following some mediocre to okay art of the pinup comic book or just straight drawing nature, follow me on Instagram or Facebook page. It's rjohn.draws or rjohndraws on Facebook.
Very cool. And Brian, so good to have you back, man. Thanks so much for being here.
Oh, man, it's my pleasure to come back and help out any way I can. And I just want to, let me just throw this out there. John is a, I just want to say, man, you're doing a fantastic job. You're a great addition to this show and loving what you're bringing to the podcast. And really, short of somebody that may be way more famous than any of us, I think you're just a great addition to the show and glad you're here. And congratulations and all those other warm and fuzzy feelings and, you know, all that fancy shit. So.
Thanks, Chief. I really hope to continue to be doing you guys proud, man. I really hope to do you proud, sir.
You're doing me proud. Keep it up, and glad to see you're part of the team.
Hear, hear. Really, really enjoying conversing with you, John. So definitely. I got two all quick plugs as well. As you guys all know, I am the host of the Gaming Outsider podcast, which is a sister podcast of this one. If you like video games, be sure to check us out at thegamingoutsider.com. We got a weekly episode as well. And also, I got to give a plug for Aaron. He recently started up a podcast on Westworld, which you mentioned earlier. It's called What's Beyond Westworld. It is beyondwestworldpodcast.com. And it's fantastic. My new favorite thing is to watch the actual Westworld episode, listen to their Beyond Westworld podcast, and then go back and rewatch the episode and just feel like I rediscovered it. It's really, really cool, and it's taking off very well. So be sure to check out that podcast. But that's going to do it. So, Brian, you want the honors to lead us out of here?
Remember, the next time you head to a theater, buy popcorn.
Does that feel good,
Yay.
Man? Does that feel good?
Feels good.
Feels was good. That, hey, Brian, what game did you come up with for the thing?
Stump the Hoe.
Stump the Hoe? Okay.
That was a passive-aggressive way to change subjects.
Oh, sorry. I'm in Aaron mode right now.
I'm just cracking up because, like, we're having this conversation. You're like, so what do you want for Stump the Hoe?
You know, but it's when you hear... You know, when you hear a soda or a beer can crack open, you know, 30 minutes into a movie, it's like, wait a minute, that's not a sound I should be hearing.
Does that really bother? Does that really bother you though?
On one, I'm like, okay, that's really loud because it's, you know, it's usually at a quiet part of a movie that somebody does it. They don't do it during the explosions.
No, they don't. They always wait for the quiet part because that way it's funny and everyone can distract people.
Exactly. And so there's that. Then there's that thought of going, damn, a beer sounds good right now.
And I'm going to do the intro a little bit different just to fuck with Aaron. So
yeah.
All right.
He's so spoiled and, you know, and all of his, like, well, this is how it's got to be, it's, you know.
He hurt himself again. Did you see that?
Did he really?
Yeah. He, like, he sprained his hand. He thought he broke it. Went to the doctor. It's only sprained. It's severely sprained.
That boy just needs to sit on his ass and get fatter. Because
John, go ahead and ask that question again.
So were my ums okay on that one? I think I let a couple slip out.
I didn't have too much problem with it, but.
Yeah, you definitely had more shits than ums.
Yeah, that's true.
My bad.
That was good. I think you literally did have more shits than ums.
Yeah.
I think I did too. I think what happens once the first one came out.
Yeah, and it was like, well, you know what? I've said it two or three times. What six more? It doesn't matter.
You know, why don't I just start pointing it out when everyone does it too? You said hi. Yeah. You said shit.
Yeah.
Just a double up.
I'm not alone.
Just a double up of vulgarity on every episode. That'd actually be really funny. Every time one of us swears, John just repeats it right back. Like, oh man, well, this shit was really shit.
Shit. Shit.